he thinks I'm sick. It's a perfect day for fishing, drinking beer and telling lies. It's a little bit like heaven when you're fishing with the guys. It's a little bit like heaven when you're fishing with the guys.
Hi. And I hope everybody had a Merry Christmas. This is Fish and Frank here in the chair, and we have Captain Kale in the chair across from me. And good morning, Captain Kale.
Good morning.
See how messed up we are? It's 3:36 in the afternoon, and I'm doing good morning. Well, hopefully it's morning wherever you
Between
are.
Between a week of charters and Christmas, I've given up on time and day.
Oh, yeah. This has been an unusual Christmas season. Happy and strained, all in the same portion.
Yeah, it was like that with me too.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been this discombobulated around Christmas. Usually, you know, Terry's got everything and we're all lined up, and we've bought gifts, and we've done this, and we've done that. And this year, she was like doing a little bit of something, I was doing a little bit of something, and somehow or another, it all came together, but we're not sure why.
Well, we've thrown in Christmas parties. You know, that was a week's worth of cleaning loss that could have been spent shopping. And
well, no, we've done that, you know, for the last few years. But it's just one of those weird years where things were kind of going forwards and sideways, all in the same motion.
Well, I think the big one was it really didn't feel like Christmas until 2 days ago.
Well,
then you were like, oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, this was it was an 80-degree Christmas this year. It was great.
That's fine. I love the 80-degree Christmases.
I like the 80-degree Christmas.
As long as there's no white stuff falling from the sky, I'm happy.
Yeah. I do, you know, I know it's fishing show, guys, and we're going to get there, but where I grew up, town up north, it was really cool because a lot of times around Christmas, get up and it's 11 o'clock at night, put on the clothes, and I lived just a few blocks, the last few years I was there, lived a few blocks off of major downtown. And walking through that new fallen snow at 11 o'clock at night, there's no cars, everybody's inside back then. And
kind of peaceful.
All the Christmas decorations and the department stores and the windows and just walking along, it's just beautiful. Oh, yeah. Snow crunching a little bit. And every once in a while, I get in these wonderful nostalgic memories about that. And then the next day, every once in a while, protrudes when the cars have run through the snow and it's splashing up all black and it's wet and slushy. Yeah. My feet are freezing. Yeah. And then I try and just focus on that new fallen snow and all the pretty lights, you know, try to be nostalgic. And every time I get that secondary vision of the next day after all the, you know, 2,000 cars have run through it and everything's all black, and I'm like, yeah, I love the 80-degree.
All nasty and slushy. That's no fun.
I love 80-degree Florida Christmases.
Yeah, so. I do too. I'm not good in the cold anymore.
Yeah. So, speaking of not good in the cold, the fishing's been on and off, but actually kind of on.
I'd say it's a fair assessment. It's been on and off with all these fronts that keep moving through. Last week it was winds out of the southwest, and this week it's winds out of the northeast.
That's been the weird part. Now, today was chilly all day. I mean, I don't know what's been going on.
Well, the sun never came out. We had that cloud cover, and I really wanted that sun to poke through today, and it never did.
Yeah, the whole thing about it is yesterday it was beautiful and sunny Christmas Day, and it was warm. Today, overcast.
Windy.
Windy. Blew over one of the Christmas trees I had downstairs. It's 64 degrees today. A little bit chilly. Wind out of the east-northeast at about 8 miles an hour.
It slowed down. It was about 10, 15 this morning, and then it dropped right off.
Yeah, it was a solid 15 yesterday. But, no, it's been really kind of hard to figure out where the fish are going to be.
It really has. I've been spending most of my time on the east side. Been a lot of nice trout. A lot of little trout, too. Lots of bonnet heads in there for some reason.
It's amazing how cold will run most of our sharks down towards the Keys, but the bonnets, it brings them out on the bar, and they go nuts.
And for some reason, this trip and the last trip, we caught Atlantic sharp nose in behind the bar.
Now, you had mentioned that, and I was trying to remember, ever since we had talked about that, when the last winter season I could think of with catching sharp nose, and I could not think of one.
Well, I can tell you it hasn't happened for the last four.
Yeah, I really cannot think of a winter season where we've caught sharp nose up here in the harbor. Strange year. What was the water temp? Chilly, warm?
It was about high 60s, low 70s. I'd say more towards low to mid 70s now.
Well,
it's warm enough for them. You're not going to see a big number of them. There's not a whole lot of food out there for them. Lots of cobia on the bar. Inside.
What's up with the cobia?
I don't know. Some people say it's normal. Some people say it's not. In the last four winters, I've never seen this many cobia behind the bar. Every once in a while, you'll see a little one go by following a stingray or a manatee or something like that. And these are 30 and 40 pound cobia. These are legal sized fish.
Are they hitting anything?
I only know of one person that got one to hit, and that was on one of those big goofy yellow gulp Mr. Twister looking things.
Really?
I've thrown shrimp at them, cut ladyfish to no avail. The big problem with me has been I've been out there drifting, and I'll stand on the front of the boat and watch while everybody fishes and just see what's out there. And you don't see them till the last minute because you're not looking for cobia.
Right.
You see that big dark spot on the bottom, and it's probably just a piece of grass until you get over top of it and it takes off. You know, and by then it's too late. So I really now have started anchoring a little bit more and watching further ahead of the boat now that we know what we're looking for. And we'll see if we can. I was really hoping to get one by the end of the week.
Bright green culprit worms and kind of the lime chartreuse type. Take about a 2-aught, 3-aught short shank hook and go into about the second or third ring and put it through. Don't try and weedless it.
And just stick it through.
Yeah, just put it through like if it was going to be a trailer.
Make it look like an eel.
And toss it out in front of them, and believe it or not, but it's that 7-inch worm ribbon tail.
Yep.
And don't know why, but it's that lime green chartreuse
it
green.
It looks a lot like our eels. Our eels are a greenish color.
Yeah, I have no idea, and it's the first year I've had. A guy told me about it. I told somebody else. He came back, and he's been hooking cobia on it.
Yeah, flounders, the numbers of flounder on the east side are coming up well, too.
Really?
We put one in the box last trip, two in the box this trip.
All right, how are you doing it?
Fishing for trout. Shrimp under a popping cork. Today I kind of changed things up a little bit. Even though we had the perfect drifting wind, they had five people on the boat, and it's tough to drift with five people. So what we were doing is stop at a spot, pull in, cast out as far as you can, pick off one or two fish, pull out the pole, drift down to where you were casting, stick back in, cast further out, and just kind of leapfrog down the bar doing that.
Yeah.
We didn't catch a lot of fish today. We caught a total of 9 fish, but we put 7 of them in the live well.
So 7 keepers on a 9.
Yeah, we got 4 trout. All the trout were 18 and above. 2 flounder and a bonnethead shark. So we didn't make it great, but we made it count.
Well, sometimes I can remember when I would have begged for that many fish in a day.
Yeah.
You know, I've had those days too. And it's funny because we're used to catching so many fish that you get the days where you're, you know, catch 6 to 9 fish in that, you know, 4 or 5 hour window. It really feels like it's a little slow because you know you can do better. But really,
until you hand them an 8-pound bag of meat.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty good. But I'm just saying, you know, you get that perception in your head that you, because I think we know what's possible to catch. And so when you have that day and you're not hitting those numbers and you know what is possible, I think that's what makes it feel like it's slower.
Well, it's frustrating when you can sit out there and catch 100 trout in a day. And a month ago, that wasn't a problem. You could probably sit in one spot and catch 100 trout.
Right.
you may only put one or two in the box.
Exactly.
You know, but now we're getting to the point where it's going to be quality over quantity. And I think that's another good reason that those Kobe are in there. There's a lot of small trout for them to feed on. There's a good number of blue crabs for them to feed on. You're constantly seeing, and one of the things that I've been doing is get out there when that sun starts coming up, watch the birds. Watch the white pelicans, the ospreys, the brown pelicans. They all seem to gather in one spot on the bar, in behind the bar. And then they start drifting with it, whatever it is.
Right.
I haven't been able to see what it is. I don't know if it's shrimp. I don't know if it's a crab hatch. I don't know if it's a spattering of white bait or pinfish or what. But they chase it for almost a mile up the bar.
Really?
And that's been the easiest way to find the fish. Find that group of birds, get up ahead of them, and wait for them to push the fish to you.
Well, there you go. That's actually useful information.
How about that?
Yeah. I'm sitting here. It took a moment for all that to seep right into that, but that's very cool. Yeah, it's amazing how once you... The hard part about doing charters, if you're not on the water to watch the patterns of the birds, the water, the fish, and see where things are going, it's very hard to keep up on the fish.
Yeah, it is. And give me 5 minutes out there to watch and look around, and I'll tell you what kind of a day it's going to be. Are there mullet jumping? Are there birds flying? Or is it just completely dead out there? You'll start seeing that the more you're on the water and the more you start looking for it. You know, we look for birds for finding fish and bait offshore, but nobody really thinks about watching the birds here inshore.
Oh, exactly.
You know, if we're looking for bait, we'll watch the pelicans.
But yeah.
Very seldomly do you watch the birds back inside the keys on the east side.
Yeah, you know, I'm not really...
Are those herons and... Those other type of birds, are they waiting out there? Are they active? Or are they just sitting in a tree doing nothing?
Gotcha.
You know, when all of those birds, all your ospreys, any of your hunting birds out there on the shallow water, if they're all up in the trees doing nothing, well, chances are the fish are doing nothing too.
But if everything else is alive and active, the fish will be alive and active.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it kind of goes along with that solar lunar table. You know, maybe not that works or doesn't work, but
same
basic concept is activity is activity.
Right.
And it seems like if one type animal is moving, many more types are.
If your small stuff is moving, something's going to eat them.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we saw it earlier in the year around ponds. Just pelicans and lease terns everywhere. You know, what was that? And we went in and it was shrimp everywhere.
Right.
You know, and it was trout underneath the shrimp. There was still some Spanish mackerel in there.
It's staggering to me how many shrimp are in Charlotte Harbor, the canals, the creeks and all that, and that you really can't do it with a cast net.
Right.
You know, you go to these other areas, they throw a chum ball out and all the shrimp congregate and they throw the cast net on and they've got good shrimp. And I've tried a lot of different techniques here, and really the only one that works for catching shrimp is dipping them, putting the light down at night, outgoing tide, and just dip them as they come
You're
by.
You're catching the ones that are caught up in the current. It's
the ones that are traveling, trying to get to the Gulf. Yeah.
Out of all the fishing that I've done, freshwater, saltwater around the world, our fish from top of the food chain to the bottom of the food chain act completely different than anywhere else.
I'd have to agree with that.
I've said it many times, you know, when you go up into those big lakes in Canada fishing for pike, you're fishing for a predator. If you hit the trout streams of Pennsylvania for trout, you're fishing for a predator. Down here, our fish are prey.
They're all prey.
They're all prey. And you have to fish them like they're prey, not a predator.
Because while they are predators, they are attacking stuff. It's kind of like we used to say years ago, you know, if somebody really needed their butt kicked, somebody was going to come along and do it. Because there's always somebody bigger, always somebody badder.
Yeah.
But in a lake, that's not necessarily true because there is a thing. And once you're top, your apex,
once you're a certain size, you're the big boy in the block.
But here, a school of dolphins can move in, eight, 9 foot bull shark, and then a 15 foot hammerhead can come to eat him.
Sure. And it's, I mean, you notice none of these big redfish tours that run the entire Gulf Coast and up through the Carolinas. They don't come here anymore.
No, no.
They complained about not being able to catch fish here. It was always the locals that were winning these tournaments here, and they have taken Charlotte Harbor off the stop. And that's because everywhere they go and fish for redfish, those redfish are an apex predator. Yes, there are dolphin. Yes, there are shark. But by the time those redfish get there, they're at a size where they're not having so much to worry about.
Right.
We're down here, our redfish are prey, period.
Whether they're 30, 40 inches long or whether
there's always something there that's going to eat them.
Yeah.
You know, whether, be it a Goliath grouper or a shark or a dolphin, there's always something there to worry about.
That's a good point. Now, I'm going to say I probably hadn't really thought of it that way before, that every fish here always has something above it in the food chain.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the reason why if you're fishing in a pier, you're going to find your snook and all that under the pier because they're kind of the top predator around the pier unless there's a big Goliath there or something. But the trout, being prey, they don't want to get up underneath there because that's where something's going to eat them. So they'll hang around the outside, cast out for the trout, under the pier for the big fish.
Yeah, and but at the same time, notice that snook won't leave that dock.
Well, he knows he's going to get eaten exactly. if he does. Yeah. So, you know, lots of cool things to think about. So, I know you got several trips booked up. Do you have a couple extra days if somebody wants a charter they can call?
So far, I'm booked all the way till the 2nd of January.
Okay.
That seems to be where I'm hanging now is about a week out. I haven't had a chance to see how much that's going to change. Usually when that hammer falls after Christmas, I'm usually 2 weeks to a month out.
Yeah,
but
right now you can get somebody out within a
week or a couple of days. We can get somebody out on the water.
So anyway, did you have a nice Christmas?
I did have a good Christmas.
I saw the pictures. You got some plaques with a redfish.
Yeah, I got a redfish mount with a blue crab that I've been wanting. I've been wanting to get more fish mounts in the house.
Right.
And hopefully start pushing out Barb's picture collection to do so.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to happen. That was Barb just walking through. You probably picked the wrong time to say that. You're lucky I didn't hear you. Yeah. See, you're very lucky she didn't hear you.
I got a garage door opener, which I was ecstatic about.
Yeah, that's very cool.
I'm tired of lifting the garage door. Just like you got tired of walking up all those steps and bought a lift, I got tired of lifting that garage door.
Actually, it wasn't that got me. I don't mind the stairs too much because, you know, it's healthy and it's only 28 steps up to the house, but
it still sucks on grocery day.
Oh, it didn't bother me that bad. But when Terry got hurt that one time, she got real sick, and I didn't know how I was going to get her out of the house, how to get down. And it was really hard because I'm getting to the point, I don't know if I could, you know, 5-10 years ago I could pick her up, carry her down, but
nobody's getting any younger.
Yeah, I could do it still if I had to, but in a couple years.
And by God, you don't have to.
Yeah, I don't have to. I can just get in there, push the button, and it takes me down. You know, it might be all over before we get to the bottom with that thing so slow, but it's, you know, other than that, it does work. But, let's see. Other than that, I don't really know what's going on around the area. I'm getting a lot of mixed reports. The west side of the harbor, if you're going to go over there and fish the west side, you've got to get back to the creeks.
Yeah, it's...
The problem is there's no water to get there.
That's the hard part. It's our tides are getting a little bit later in the day.
Lower and lower.
But they're getting lower and lower. So you got to get in there first thing in the morning, catch a couple fish, and get out.
Well, the whole thing is, the best thing to do is be prepared to get a little wet and to wade your, pull up your boat, drop your hook, and in a safe place where there's some water, and then wade to the mouth of the creek. Because usually there's some type of sandbar at the mouth, and you got to stay outside of that. Otherwise, you're not getting back out.
Yeah, I really wanted to hit my creek there on the west side, but with five people in the boat, I knew it was going to be a risk getting in. It'd be even worse getting out.
Getting over the bar is a real trouble right now. And then once you're back on the flat, you've got enough to maneuver around with, but not enough to really get up to try and slide over the bar.
Right.
So we do a lot when we get back there. If we've got a few inches less than what you really should have, a lot of times we'll hit the throttle hard and literally try and toboggan over the bar, hoping you're going to slide far enough to make it to the other side. And it's rather dangerous, but after you've done it, you know, 500 times, it's not as dangerous as it was the first time.
Yeah, but it keeps the stuff from growing on the bottom of your boat.
It's always a little risky, though, because if you're off in your estimation by half inch of water, you're not going to make it across.
No. It's not a problem with me, because I've got a flat bottom boat. It's the guys with the V-hulls that... You've got to really watch that half inch, because that's the difference between throwing people off the front of the boat at a screeching halt or not.
Right, and your boat will run in more water than it'll set in.
Right.
So if you do hit bottom with your boat, most of the time you just stop and it'll just float up.
Right.
And you can just walk it off. But a V-hull runs in less water than it'll float in.
Right, so when it stops, it stops.
You're pretty much hit, eek, over to the side.
And you wait for a high tide.
Wait for a high tide. Yeah, been there, done that. We were just talking about that with Terry, where I was back coming from Turtle Bay, going over to Bull Bay on the very, very backside. We were way in the back, and we were scouting fish on a super low tide day, and I missed the back there where you're coming through. You've got about a 6-foot wide area, and that's pretty good space. But if you're a foot off of that, I hit a little bar underwater, launched the boat into the air, came down on a mud flat.
Ooh.
And there I was in about 4 inches of water with about a foot and a half of muck. So we weren't hard aground. We were in, weren't going anywhere. So the proper method, if you guys ever get stuck in the harbor here, what you do is you take everything out of the back of the boat, get every life jacket, bottle of soda, everything you can find.
Drain your live wells.
Move it to the front of the boat. The flatter the boat sits, the less water you draft. The more the back end sinks down, and half an inch can make all the difference. So we loaded everything. Ice chests, life jackets, drinks, anything we had in the boat up on the bow. Flatten the boat out. And then I give her a rope. I take my anchor line, take the anchor off, tie it to the front of the boat, and have her walk back and forth until she finds something that's a little bit deeper. And then she holds the rope, and I get in the back, and I do the major pushing of the boat, you know.
Lift and push.
Lift and push. Put your back to it, grab, you know, bend your knees, straighten your knees, bend your knees, straighten your knees, trying to get that boat to go forward while she controls the front of it with the rope. And A, she doesn't, you know, she can grab it and lean, but it keeps the boat going towards deeper water.
Right.
If both of you are on the back of the boat pushing, you have no way to know if you're going to shallower or deeper water. You could literally be putting yourself in a worse position.
Because you're usually turned around backwards, lifting it up and pushing at the same time.
Your back is to the boat, and you're just picking up, trying to use all your muscle. And years ago, we did that, and we put ourselves in a worse position than we were in. We were able to move the boat a little bit, and then all of a sudden we pushed it up and bottomed it, and we could not move it at all.
Yeah.
So since then, one person on a rope out the front of the boat, they control the nose, pulling it to deeper water all the time, and the other person on the back of the boat, you know, put your back to it, get your hands down there, bend your knees, and straighten up. Remember, don't use your back. Nothing worse than being stuck and having a blown out back.
Yeah, yeah. And I try not to take extra risks. I won't take risks in the wintertime that I do in the summertime. I've put it in good once this year, and that's it, which is pretty good.
Did you have Carl or Dave or somebody on the boat? You didn't have customers on the boat.
No.
You had a friend on the boat, and you guys were pushing the limit real bad that day.
Well, it wasn't as much. I did. We were sitting inside Poacher's Cut, and I wanted to take the shortcut out to the skating rink and not go all the way back through. And I needed about an inch more water.
Yeah.
And we set it down. You really can't set that boat down hard. You know, we had to get out and had to empty out the live well. And and wiggle it a little bit to break the suction, and we only had to push it about 10 feet.
Yeah. But it's amazing. Now, the one thing I've always maintained is that Charlotte Harbor is one of the safest places in the world to boat. Because, literally, yeah, what's the worst that's going to happen to you? You're going to slide up on the sand somewhere.
When I do my educational trips or my seminars, I try to make a conscientious effort to not say that this is a dangerous body of water. It is challenging. But as far as hurting yourself or hurting your boat, it's hard to do down here.
Well, unless you're Carl. But other than that, you know.
This is true.
Yeah, if you're Carl, many things could happen to your boat. But for normal people, you're going along, you're going to hit a sandbar, you're going to get stuck in the mud. You know, but it's not like it's life-threatening. It's major and annoying. It's like me last year. I had all this health issues and stuff, but they were all like diabetes. It's not, okay, you got cancer, you're going to die. It's don't eat bread and sugar. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, for some people, diabetes is a life-threatening thing, and it's a horrible, horrible condition. For me, I was lucky. I didn't get that. I got the annoying one.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of the way Charlotte Harbor is. It doesn't have
exactly
the bad things, you know, the you're going to die things, except the things people put there. All those stupid markers. And everybody comes down, they want more and more markers, and it's the only thing going to hurt you on the water.
Markers that we don't need.
We don't need the markers. You know, they're not... They're just not useful.
There isn't a single one of these canals that need markers out in the harbor. Not a one. You go straight out. Well,
one.
You're right. The one that
going into Edgewater Lake.
Edgewater Lake and the one just above Colony. Because that one comes out and makes a right angle turn.
Right. Bass Inlet should have one. The one on Edgewater Lake.
Yep.
And the... the one by the yacht club there. Those could use them. But they don't need as many. They could shorten them up. They got about four or six too many out there.
If you go straight in and straight out, you're fine. Alligator Creek. Look down.
Yeah. Gee, look down. Does it look like sand? Oh, I'm probably running a little too shallow.
Right. Is that water light or is that water dark? If it's dark, you're in the channel.
If it's not, you're...
We don't need marker one and marker two out there anymore.
The only reason we need them is for bait.
For bait. That's they're good
the only structure out there because shrimp boats drag that harbor so flat. It's like a gravel road.
It is the only purpose that they serve now is structure for bait.
Yeah. I mean, I would actually like to take marker one and see if maybe they won't allow us to put any more reefs in, but maybe we could enlarge marker one. You know? I mean, it's already big. Let's put another 8 or 10 pilings there, you know? Make it a little longer.
You know, we don't need 3.
Right.
Or 3A. You don't have them lit anyways.
Oh.
4 we don't need.
No, they're all just there to give me trouble when I'm running at night.
Yeah. I mean, we don't bring boats that big into the harbor anymore.
Oh, if you've got that much money where you're running a 100-foot boat...
You don't come to Port Charlotte. No.
You're going to Naples.
You go to Naples. You go to Miami. You go to places you don't have to worry about water depth.
Right. You just don't, you know, we've only had 100-foot yacht in the harbor here in the last few years. And even he doesn't use it anymore. So, anyway, outside of that, been a great year. And your charters are still doing well. People are still having fun.
Yeah.
The fishing's a little iffy. And right now... You're thinking, okay, it's too shallow. I don't want to go out. I can't catch any fish. I'm telling you, wait and find the day with the lowest tide you can get. Make sure the wind's blowing hard out of the north and prepare for Lewis and Clark. Don't come and buy shrimp. Don't get anything. Put a couple lures in the boat. Rig a topwater on one rod, maybe a jig on the other or a storm twitch or something like that.
Yep.
Have a couple little lures with you because you should always have something rigged and ready. Maybe a Johnson Sprite would be a good one. But go out, go down the east side of the harbor, come back up the west side of the harbor, and the water is so shallow, you can literally see, okay, there's water in this place and this is all dirt. You're going to see where the troughs are, where the holes are, where the depressions are, because there's no water anywhere else. Everything else is drained off. And if you go there in a high tide, it all looks the same. It's all water. Get there on those super mega low tides and take your binoculars with you. Come up outside the bar, anchor up, and look back there on the flats. Just fill your brain with it, because A, it's so
absolutely
cool.
It is cool.
You'll unbelievable.
You'll see a lot more stuff than you would ever imagine. You'll see a lot more stuff during that kind of water than you will at a high tide.
Well, you can't see anything at high tide but water. So, you know, I can't encourage you enough to do that. Get out there and get into those low tide days and go just idle the boat as slow as possible. Use your trolling motor or just, you know, put the nose up in the sand, take your binoculars and look around. But actually get out and learn something about the features of the flats and the harbor. Look at the bars, because if you can find a place where there's water going through the bar on that slow, on that negative tide,
yeah,
and everything else is exposed out of the water, as soon as that little cut gets a foot, 2 foot of water, 18 inches of water, those fish are going to try and get in and out there.
And it's also a good place, you know, if you don't want to run all the way up to Alligator Creek or all the way down to Pirate Harbor, there's your spot to get in and out of the sandbar.
I got three cuts, and when the water's, I can actually see sandbar and areas sticking out of the water where I can still make it in and out. And I know where they are, so I zip in and out of those, and I get people that see me go out and cut across the bar, and all you hear behind me is, because like that day when I grounded my boat out, you miss it by a foot, you might as well missed it by a half a mile.
Yep, you're done.
So it's kind of fun. But anyway, anything else we should go over?
Not that I can think of.
So if someone calls you up right now, and how are you doing the trips? Are you getting the bait before you go out? Are you trying to find bait? What are you doing?
No, I quit looking for white bait 2 months ago.
Okay, so
I'm into shrimp mode.
You're getting the boat. You've got the bait ready.
Shrimp and artificials.
You're picking them up like at Ponce or Lashley?
Yep, Ponce or Lashley. Usually what I'll do, if I've got a couple people on the boat, give one the artificial, give the other one the shrimp under a popping cork, because it's been changing. One day they want the 17 MRs, the next day they want the shrimp. If I only have one person on the boat, then I'll give him the shrimp and I'll throw the artificial. If they start hitting, we'll trade off and just keep working what we got until we start filling that live well. Shrimp is doing extremely well out there. Everything that we've been catching for the last 2 months, from snook on down, have been shrimp.
Well, I've talked to about 10 captains here in the last 2 weeks, and everybody's throwing shrimp. A few guys are doing a little bit with pinfish, but shrimp is pretty much the mainstay. Some of the guys down south in the harbor are finding some thread fins or some white bait. But their fallback is the shrimp, because when the water gets in that 60s, you know, high 60s, low 60s, shrimp is still the king of baits.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's nice to, I can come into the shop, I can get 10 dozen. And what I don't use, I leave in my live well. You know, they're staying alive overnight without a problem.
And it's nice, because one of the, I got to tell you, it sounds like the bait fish isn't much money, but by the time you spend the gas to go look for it, buy the chum, do the cast nets, do all that.
Yeah, I laugh anytime some people say, well, bait fish are free. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Then hand over that $300 cast net, the extra $15, $20 in fuel you spent to go get them.
And the time.
And the time.
And the chum. And
well, yeah, don't forget, $5 a bag for chum.
You know, okay, you got the chum, you got all this stuff, you've got the time, you've got everything. And very seldom can it be done in less than an hour or two. And so for those people, if it's free, it means their time is meaningless. So anybody who has no value to their time, me, when I get a chance to go fishing, that's very precious time. That's expensive time because, A, I'm not working, I'm going out in the water, but I'm out there to relax, catch fish, have fun, and I'd rather be throwing a lure, casting a shrimp, than spending 2, 3, 4 hours looking for bait, fish for an hour, and go home. Too stressful.
Yeah. Yeah, and plus, I mean, this time of year, if you're finding bait, it's down south.
Down south, there was a little bit at Placida.
Yeah.
Now, so when you come out of the boat ramp, straight across, right over by the main bridge, there is some, nothing of any real big size, but there is some over there.
So you're either going to run all the way down there with your clients. I mean, you're not going to run down there and come all the way back up here and pick them up. You know, so it's, you're spending a lot of money to get bait.
Yeah. Right now, it's an expensive proposition, and it's not necessary.
No, absolutely not necessary. With the amount of pinfish out there, the amount of shrimp.
in another, if, when the water jumps up 5 more degrees, you're going to need a lot of that to really have those spectacular days, because it's going to be one day shrimp, one day whitebait, yep. And once the water temp starts hitting 75, 76 degrees, you're going to have to find whitebait to catch that, you know, 30, 40, 50 fish a trip day.
Yeah.
But for right now, not necessary, and it's a one. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
We caught, me and a client sat out there 2 weeks ago, and I think we caught 60 trout.
Right.
And we didn't use a single piece of bait. It was, we each had a 17 MR in our hand, and we threw it all day long.
Yeah. Now, one thing I don't do, I enjoyed being able to teach people how to use lures, because,
yeah,
especially with a mirror lure. Now, the 17 MR is a mirror lure, and it's classified as a twitch bait, and which means if you threw it out and reel it in, it would come in like if you tied a stick on the line. Has no action.
None.
It doesn't do anything. And it's not going to catch a fish that way.
No.
Except if you get one that is riding the short bus to the school of other fish.
Right.
But
you'll get that one cross-eyed trout.
Yeah. But for the most part, when you're throwing an MR, 17 MR, you have to learn how to twitch it, how to tag it.
And it's in the twitch. It's absolutely in the twitch. You can't give it those half-hearted, lazy pull twitches. It doesn't do anything. You've got to mean it when you twitch it. You know, I've watched other people, like Josh Greer. You think he's working a popper for a
peacock bass.
A peacock bass, the way he works those 17 MRs. You know, you'd think he'd jerk it all the way out of the water back at him. But you can't do that lazy little... You know how when you get new people on the boat and you try and explain popping corks to them?
Right. And they give it that little half-hearted tug. Little
half-hearted tug. That's how they'll
timid.
Work... Yes, that's how they'll work the 17 MRs.
Until they see you slamming it around like it's...
Right.
Like it's really got you mad. Okay.
And that's what I'll do. Yeah. I'll get up on the front of the boat, start throwing, and I'll start whacking fish. I said, now, do you see what I'm doing? Mimic it.
Right.
And it's either you do that or you don't catch fish. One or the other.
Well, everyone will do that.
Yeah.
Every person will do exactly as you say, except for the guy who's only fished once in his life, somewhere back in the 70s, and caught a fish doing something.
He got the cross-eyed trout.
And he caught a fish doing that, and he has not fished since.
Right.
And that person is the one. You'll never convince him to do another technique or another style, because he did catch a fish that way once.
Right.
If somebody fishes every once in a while or doesn't fish, it's actually very easy, because they're so willing to learn, and they're out there to have a good time, and they really want the experience.
Yeah.
But you get that one guy who's been bragging about that same fish for 25 years or 30 years.
That's how he's going to fish the rest of his life. There's nothing you can do to fix
that. Nothing, because he hasn't done it again, but he did have that one fish that one day. And yeah, I know it sounds like,
that.
But literally, you'd be out there and you'd have these people who didn't fish, or people who fish all the time, they'd be catching all these fish. And the one guy, when he gets on the boat and he tells you, well, you know, back in 1983, I was out on such and such, and I caught a blank, blank, and you're like, oh, no.
Yeah, I got him.
This is going to be hard. This is going to be really difficult, because hopefully he was holding the rod the right way, and hopefully it wasn't by jerking the rod up over his head.
Yep.
You know, because you know it. Whatever he did that day, he's got it down pat and memorized.
The hardest thing that I'm coming across this year is getting people to understand, don't stop reeling. When we're out there on those trout, don't stop.
Oh, yeah.
Don't stop until you see the bobber at your feet. Don't stop.
Because the fish swimming at you.
Yeah, they'll swim at you. You've already ripped their mouth on the hook set. They swim at you. You stop because you think he got off. And then he shakes that hook out of that big gaping hole you put in his mouth because you stopped reeling.
And the problem with it is they don't understand. The trout's mouth is made to be torn up by fins, hooks, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally got like a membrane. And you poke a hole in it, and then it starts to heal, I mean, very, very rapidly. Because otherwise the fish would starve to death, because if they get a stingray or a fish that has sharp pinfish, like pinfish. They grab them the wrong way by the dorsal, pokes all the holes in them, they wouldn't be able to survive. But the membrane around the fish's mouth is made to be torn and heal and torn and heal.
Right.
And it does it very, very quickly. But it does tear, and then you've got this big open hole there, and if you're not keeping steady pressure,
the hook just falls right out. And I don't care if you're using J-hooks or circle hooks or jig heads. It doesn't matter. It's going to fall out.
The only one you stand a chance with them is...
the Cayley hook.
Yeah, the 37-140 Mustad.
Because usually they're so big, they don't come out.
Yeah, and they're less than $2 a pack. They'll hook in the corner of the mouth every time. They're so fish and environmentally friendly that if I would never pick circle hooks as my as the one hook that everybody should use, J hooks neither. But if you only had if every hook had to be exactly the same,
it'd be a Cayley
hook. It'd be a Cayley hook because hooks in the corner of the mouth, you can set it or not set it. It's just a little bulky.
Yeah, great intermediate hook if you're trying to teach yourself circle hooks. Because you're not losing fish.
You don't have to teach yourself how to do something that dumb.
Well, you do. You do. No. A lot of people want to go to circle hooks. And for all the wrong reasons.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong. It's for all the wrong reasons. As much as I use them and as much as I love them, I don't buy into the bullpucky of circle hooks.
And it's just horse hockey. Because for every good they do not swallowing it, you break jaws, you tear up stuff. They're so hard to get out of fish.
They are catch and kill hooks.
Yeah, they were always designed have been, for
it. Always will be.
3,200 years ago when the first ones were invented, or 35,000 years ago, or whatever it was, they were invented to catch and
kill
a fish.
They're designed to get fish to the boat without coming off.
And they don't. And when you're trying to get that hook out nice and gentle and you're tearing that fish all up, you'll get what we're talking about. J-hooks are good if you have the rod in your hand. Circle hooks are good if you don't have a lot of experience or the rod's in the rod holder. But now Cayley hooks is the perfect hook for trout, Spanish mackerel. I mean, I've caught every kind of fish on them, and it's the number one flounder hook in the Northeast. But it is the best hook in the world to use under a bobber. With a shrimp and a popping cork, use the 37-140 Mustad, and you'll come out like a hero every time. Yeah. Because they're easy to get out of the fish, they set well, and they're always in the corner of the mouth. I mean,
I actually prefer the circle hooks for flounder.
Really?
Give me an offset circle hook for flounder any day. Because you hook them in the same spot every time.
Okay.
Right through the tongue.
Really?
And they don't come off when you hook them through the tongue.
Really?
Yep.
Through the tongue?
Right through the tongue. Each and every one of them.
I'll be damned.
I think it's just... because of the way they lay on their side and their mouth is sideways. You know, circle hooks were designed to catch fish in the corner of the mouth that are upright.
Right.
They were never designed to catch fish that lay on their side on the bottom with their mouth different.
Okay.
It catches them in the tongue every time.
All right. Now, you can email Captain Kale with questions about this. I'm gonna call it okay. I'm gonna believe you.
I'll start taking pictures.
The land of the weird here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's got. I think on that note, I think I can actually say we have covered more things than I thought possible.
We covered more than I thought we would. We start this process the same way every time. What do you want to talk about? I don't know, whatever.
All right. So, anyway, let's go back. Let's get a little smile going. There we go. Just something to smile about. The wife, she thinks I'm working. And the boss, he thinks I'm sick. It's a perfect day for fishing, drinking beer, and telling lies. It's a little bit like heaven when you're fishing with. Now, you can click on the Diupers right on the Radio Fishing. There's a link to the Diupers website. Or if you want to find them, they're on the same road as Fish and Frank's. If you come out of our store, make a left, go just a little less than 2,000 miles on US 41, and they're in northern Michigan up there, world's largest outhouse display. Really nice people. They got a great place up there. You know, and when you leave the Upers, just turn south and you'll end up at Fish and Frank's in a few days, you know. But they are literally, they're on the same road as we are. So anyway, this is Fish and Frank here, and just want to wish, hope you guys all had a Merry Christmas. And I really hope you're able to spend it with people that you really enjoyed and appreciated. And
if you didn't like them, we hope you made out like bandits.
That would be good.
Yeah.
That would be very good. Anyway, just want to say one last time with the Merry Christmas thing, and thank you guys so much for listening and participating. We've got a lot more On the Water stuff coming up this year. Kale has recently taught me how to use the Bluetooth of my phone. We haven't been able to do the call-ins because it's on the same line as our credit card machine.
We've been busy.
So as when I've tried to do the call-in show, we haven't been able to use the cash registers. So now, Kale's, I got a new machine, and it does it Bluetooth with my cell phone. So we should be able to get some On the Water reports going. It's always a lot of little misadventures. And Captain Kale's going to show me how to refit the website, and hopefully he's going to be able to teach me that here in a few minutes. So the website's going to have a new look, a little less confusing. Whole new website, all new radio fishing coming up for the next year. So I hope you guys will say, I think we've got all the bugs worked out finally. I know I've been saying that for 6 months, but I think everything's going to work this time. Anyway, Fish and Frank, and one last Merry Christmas. Captain Kale, say goodbye.
Goodbye.